Please be seated.
The session is called to order. Good morning first to the prosecution, to the defense, and to the accused. We are going to resume this trial, which was started since 9 January 1997. On the whole, I think we are not too much behind time, but I think we could do better. Because as I recalled the other day, we must render equitable, impartial justice, but also expeditious or rapid or quick, speedy justice. The mission of the tribunal is to render justice to the people of Rwanda. The tribunal noted with a lot of pleasure that during the first months of the Akayesu trial, the hearing took place in an atmosphere of calm and serenity, even if each party did as they are right, even if each party defended their rights as they should. I hope that the what is coming on should also take place in the same atmosphere, an atmosphere of courtesy and politeness. Having said this, I wish to recall that the chamber had accepted a motion for the amendment of the indictment. And counts 13 to 15 have been added to the initial indictment. So this morning, before we start, we'll have the initial appearance of the accused on these three new counts. I would therefore ask the accused to come forward and to sit down. The registrar, we are going to have the initial appearance of the accused on the three new counts related to acts of sexual aggression and rape. On these crimes, I will appeal to you not to read the entire indictment, but simply emphasize the facts that are the basis of the three new counts, because, I hope you that is clear. Thank you, Mr. President. I will give you the floor for this part of the indictment. As the President has requested, the indictment as amended has a few new additions which we are going to read. In paragraph 10A, we read, in this act of indictment, acts of sexual violence include forcible sexual penetration of the vagina, anus or oral cavity by a penis, and or of the vagina or anus by some other object, and sexual abuse such as forced nudity. We move on to the charges. Paragraph 12A. Between April 7 and the end of June 1994, hundreds of civilians, hereinafter displaced civilians, sought refuge at the Bureau Communal. The majority of these displaced civilians were Tutsi. While seeking refuge at the Bureau Communal, female displaced civilians were regularly taken by armed local militia and or communal police and subjected to sexual violence and or beaten on or near the Bureau Communal premises. Displaced civilians were also murdered frequently on or near the Bureau Communal premises. Many women were forced to endure multiple acts of sexual violence, which were at times committed by more than one assailant. These acts of sexual violence were generally accompanied by explicit threats of death or bodily harm. The female displaced civilians lived in constant fear, and their physical and psychological health deteriorated as a result of the sexual violence and beatings and killings. Paragraph 12b. Jean-Paul Akayesu knew that the acts of sexual violence, beatings, and murders were being committed and was at times present during their commission. Jean-Paul Akayesu facilitated the commission of the sexual violence, beatings, and murders by allowing the sexual violence and beatings and murders to occur on or near the Bureau communal premises by virtue of its presence during the commission of the sexual violence, beatings, and murders, and by failing to prevent the sexual violence, beatings, and murders, Jean-Paul Akayesu encouraged these activities. We are going to move on to the charges. Charges, that is counts 13 to 15, page 9. By his acts in relation to the events at the Bureau communal, as described in paragraphs 12a and 12b, Jean-Paul Akayesu committed the following crimes. Count 13, crimes against humanity, rape, punishable by Article 3, paragraph G of the Statute of the Tribunal. Count 14, crimes against humanity, other inhumane acts, punishable by Article 3I of the Statute of the Tribunal. And count 15, violations of Article 3 common to the Geneva Conventions and of Article 4.2e of Additional Protocol 2 as incorporated by Article 4e, outrages upon personal dignity, in particular rape, degrading and humiliating treatment, and indecent assault of the Statute of the Tribunal. Date, June 17, 1997, Louise Abor, Prosecutor. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Prosecutor. Thank you, Mr. Registrar. In accordance with the provisions of Rule 62, after having made sure that the accused has counsel, we will now ask the accused whether he has understood the content of the indictment with regards to counts 13 to 15, where you are accused of having encouraged acts of rape and sexual assault. I've understood, Mr. President, says the accused. I thank you. Now, I am going to ask you, going to call on you to plead guilty or not guilty in respect to these three counts. At the same time, I would like to remind you that you may not plead not guilty, and this will be put in the records. Count 13 is a part of acts that were committed in the events that took place at the Bureau communal. Under count 13, you are being accused of crimes against humanity, particularly rape, punishable by Article 3G of the Statute of the Tribunal. With respect to this count, count 13, Jean-Paul Akayesu, do you plead guilty or not guilty? The accused, on this count, I plead not guilty. Count 14, you are also accused of crimes against humanity, which include other inhumane acts punishable by Article 3.1 of the Statute of the Tribunal. On this count, count 14, Jean-Paul Akayesu, do you plead guilty or not guilty? On this count, count 14, I plead not guilty. count 15. You are accused of violations of Article 3, common to the Geneva Conventions, and of Article 4.2e of Additional Protocol 2, as incorporated by Article 4e, outrages upon personal dignity, in particular rape, degrading and humiliating treatment, and indecent assault of the statute of the tribunal. On this count, count 15, Jean-Paul Akeyesu, do you plead guilty or not guilty? The accused, on this count, count 15, I plead not guilty. Sit down. Thank you, Mr. President. The tribunal takes note of the fact that you've pleaded not guilty on these three new counts, which are incorporated in the initial indictment and which are part of the same case. Are there any comments on the part of the prosecution?
Just briefly, to begin with, I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce members of the trial team. To my right, we have Ms. Sarah Darashori and Ms. Patricia Sellers. But as far as comment on the indictment, I would like to just inform the chamber, as we did in a written notice, that the evidence we will present, we believe, is being presented in support of not only the new charges, but also to the charge of genocide and the other existing charges. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, any comments? No. No comments of counsel. We are now going to delve into the matter, and I will now give the floor to the prosecution.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, briefly, I just have a couple quick comments to make before we call our first witness. Firstly, I just want to make the chamber aware that the prosecution recognizes that, considering the subject matter that we are about to present, that we are governed under Rule 96. We know that the chamber is well aware of this. We just wanted to state that for the record. Additionally, I wanted to make both the chamber and defense counsel aware of a language or interpretation issue that we may have. I've spoken to some of our Kinyarwandan interpreters, as well as the chief of the language section, and they have informed me that due to cultural restraints, in Kinyarwandan, witnesses and interpreters do not use the explicit language of penis or vagina or sexual organs. Instead, what they may do is they may use other words to reference that. For example, they may say that if a question was asked whether or not there was penetration by the penis into a vagina, the question may be translated to say something to the effect that, did this person penetrate you inside? I just want to make all parties aware of this, and I'm informed that in the context, there is no room for confusion and there is no ambiguity. We have Mr. Joel Canet here present today to speak before the chamber if necessary. I believe he has spoken to his interpreters and has information to provide the chamber. The last issue I wanted to inform the chamber of is that our first witness, witness JJ, recently had a baby. I believe the baby is now 10 or so days old. It is possible that during the course of the proceedings, she may need to take a break to see the baby and to also feed the baby. Again, I just want to make all parties aware of this. At this time, we are prepared to call our first witness, witness JJ.
The prosecutor, we heard what you said concerning the interpretation of some words. We perfectly understand that in general the African languages are quite complicated on that matter. Now, before proceeding to the examination in chief of your witness, I've been informed that there are two interpreters who have to take oath. Are there two or one? I think there is only one interpreter. I would appeal to the accused to return to his place first, to his seat. Thank you, Mr. President. That's the counsel speaking. The Defense would like to ask the prosecution to specify whether we are talking about witness JJ, who has to be heard now, or whether it's witness... Is it witness JJ or witness GG? Who is the witness who has to be heard now, JJ or GG?
JJ isn't
she. Yeah. That's okay. Thank you, counsel, for that clarification. The interpreter who has to take oath, where is he or she? You raise your right hand and you repeat after me the solemn declaration. I solemnly undertake to carry out my duties as interpreter to the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda with devotion, independence, and impartiality, and with full respect for the duty of confidentiality. Pursuant to Rule 76 of the Rules of Procedure and Evidence. We will now ask the bailiff to bring in witness JJ, but before that we should pull the curtain because the witness is a protected witness.
Good morning, madam. Good morning. You've been called here by the office of the prosecutor to testify. But before you begin with your examination in chief, we're going to ask you to make a solemn declaration, which is provided for in our rules of procedure and evidence before anyone may testify. I'm going to ask you now to stand up, to raise your right hand. Raise your right hand, please. And please repeat after me. I'll be speaking in French. I assume you wish to express yourself in Kinyarwanda. Does she wish to express herself in Kinyarwanda? Please ask her. She seems a bit frightened, but please ask her. Does she wish? Yes, she wishes to take the solemn declaration in Kinyarwanda. So please repeat after me, and I ask that you to translate and have her repeat after what I'm telling to her and respond in Kinyarwanda to what I say. I solemnly declare that I will speak the truth, says the president. That I will speak the truth, says witness. The whole truth, says the president. The whole truth, says the witness. And nothing but the truth, says the president. And nothing but the truth, says the witness. Please be seated, says the president. I'm now like to explain to the witness how the testimony will proceed. She should understand that she can speak without any fear. I see she is a bit apprehensive, but you should understand that nothing will happen to her. We also ask that she speak without taking any particular sides or without emotion or hate. The prosecutor stated a moment ago that she is breastfeeding her child, and so each time she feels it is necessary to go and to breastfeed her child, then just simply indicate this to the court and we will take a brief recess for that. This being the case, I now give the floor to the prosecutor. I'd like to also insist that the witness truly be at ease and also that the witness be closer to the microphone because we cannot hear her. We can hear the interpreter, but we cannot hear the witness. Can we ask her to be more relaxed? You have the floor, prosecutor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, witness JJ.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming to testify before the tribunal. As we discussed before, I will ask you some questions concerning your experiences in Rwanda back in 1994. Back in April of 1994, where did you live? And please, you can just specify by commune.
We were living in Taba commune.
Is that in Rwanda?
It's a commune in Rwanda, in Gitarama Prefecture.
Around the beginning of April, did you ever receive news of the crash of the president's plane?
Yes, I heard this. I heard and learned of this news on the 7th of April, 1994.
Do you recall where you were when you received this news?
Yes, I can recall.
Where were you?
I was at my home, in the house.
Were you alone or with other people?
I was with people from my family. There were 10 of us.
After receiving the news that day or the following days, do you remember what the atmosphere or the environment was like in Taba or in your particular neighborhood.
In Taba Commune, after having heard of this news, we continue to hear gunfire, but this gunfire was coming from the city of Kigali.
Was there any activities or violence occurring in Taba at this time?
The witness was speaking at the same time, so I did not hear. Could you please repeat your question?
I apologize. If the witness was responding, could you please translate her answer for us?
Microphone to the president, please.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. The problem is I unfortunately cannot see the witness to tell whether or not she's speaking. My question is, at this time, was there any activities or violence occurring within Taba?
On that day, there was no crime or violence that had begun in Taba Commune.
Well, in the days following this, how were you feeling?
I myself began to become afraid because there was an atmosphere that was not very positive in that area. Because it was just stated that Mr. President Habyarimana had been killed by Tutsis. And so I was afraid because of these sayings.
How were your neighbors treating you at this time?
I could see that there was not a good atmosphere.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. At this time, were you and your family considered or identified as a Hutu or Tutsi?
We were considered to be Tutsis.
In the days following the crash of the president's plane, were you staying at home or sleeping at home?
It was not a very good atmosphere, so we could not spend the night in our homes. And the population began to carry out patrols, night patrols. There was not enough security, so we began to spend the night outside of our homes.
Where would you stay?
We would spend the night near our homes, but we would not enter the home itself.
At some point in time, did the situation change in the area near your home?
The situation began to change, and in the end, the killings began.
Did anyone ever come to the location of your house and do anything?
They came before, and they destroyed the house before beginning to kill us.
Can you tell us about that, please? How this happened?
Our neighbors came, they destroyed our house, and they began to eat our livestock.
Where were you as this was happening?
We were near the house because they had not yet begun to kill.
Were you hiding or out in the open?
We were close to them. They would look at us. We would look at them. But they had not yet begun, or killing had not yet really begun in our cellular.
These people who destroyed your home and ate your livestock, your neighbors, do you know whether or not they were Hutu or Tutsi?
They were Hutus.
What happened after this?
After having destroyed our house and after having eaten our livestock, they began to kill us.
Excuse me. At this time, did you see any killings actually occurring?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you saw at this particular time, please?
The following day, in the morning, after having destroyed our house and killed and eaten, rather, our livestock, very early in the morning, one person came, because we lived in the lower part of a hill. A person came to the top of the hill and told us that today, pardon, I'd like to retake the sentence again, one person went to the top of the hill and said that the burgomaster had sent that person so that no Tutsi would remain on that hill on that particular night.
Do you know who the burgomaster of Taba was at that time?
It was a man named Jean-Paul Akaezu.
Did you know him from before?
I would see him when he was teaching.
At this time, I would like for you to take a look around the courtroom and tell us whether or not you see Jean-Paul Akaezu.
There he is in the middle, and he's seated alone.
Can you please, excuse me, point to him and tell us what he is wearing today?
There are two men behind him.
he's the one who's in front of them, and he's wearing something on the side of his ears. And he's also wearing a jacket, which is in a light color.
Your Honor, let the record reflect that the witness has identified the accused, Mr. Jean-Paul Akayesu. Thank you. After this person made this statement from the top of the hill, what happened next?
There were attacks that took place. Attackers gathered together, and they began to carry out their acts.
At this time, did you see any of these acts?
Yes, I would see it.
What did you see exactly?
I left our house after having seen several persons killed, and I even saw their dead body.
These people that were killed, do you know whether or not they were Hutu or Tutsi?
These were the dead bodies of Tutsis.
And do you know whether or not some of these people were, for example, farmers or professors?
They began to kill us after having killed the teachers and the other intellectuals.
Did you personally see any intellectuals being killed?
I saw a teacher from our area who was our neighbor. His name was Ngambage. He was taken out from his home. The farmers, they had not yet begun killing us. They had first begun by killing the teachers because they said they were helping the Inkotani.
You mentioned the word Inkotani. What is Inkotani?
That person, before they brought him, they said that they had found him with letters from Inkotani.
But as far as Inkotani, the group, do you know what it is? Is it, are they Tutsis? Is it someone else, another group of sorts?
It was said that this young man had been caught with paper, with correspondence from Inkotani.
After the killings began in your area, you told us that you went somewhere. Where did you go?
We sought refuge in the neighboring forest.
You said we. Who were you with at that time?
I was with my younger sister, who had already been wounded, but she was not yet dead.
Do you know how she suffered these injuries?
She was wounded and killed near our house.
How long did you stay in this neighboring forest?
I spent only one day there because people who were hidden were being looked after. People were looking for those who had hidden themselves in the forest.
Did anything happen to you while you were hiding in this forest?
I left the forest and I went to a place called Murambi. The president's microphone is not on. We're sorry. George Aspergreen would like clarifications on two questions you asked. A question on Inkotanis and the Tutsi. And who wounded the sister? How was she wounded? These are questions that are important to the tribunal. Madam, these people who came, you said they were Hutus. Can you describe them a little bit more, since you say they belong to a group? Were they in the Inkotanis, for example? They were Hutus. How did you know they were Hutus? They were our neighbors, and we knew very well that they were Hutus, and they ran after us. These neighbors, to the best of your knowledge, were they members of a political party, a movement, or something of the sort? The political party was in fashion at the time. Some of them were members of the MRND and other parties whose names I do not remember. And you know that some of your neighbors who destroyed your house, who killed your livestock and who killed women, were they members of the MRND party? I could not make a distinction. I didn't know whether they belonged to a specific political party because they were, in fact, part of the attack that was directed against many persons. But you are certain that among these persons there were at least some of your neighbors whom you had known before? Yes, they were our most immediate neighbors. Now, if they are neighbors that you recognize, these neighbors, were they members of a political party, for example, the MRND power? In my region, there were many people who were members of the MDR. Some of them were members of the MDR power, and others were members of the other wing of the MDR. But at some time in point, the entire population rose up against us. I repeat the question. Among the neighbors who attacked you, were there some persons who, to the best of your knowledge, were members of a political party, for example, the MDR power? I'm not talking about the general situation. I'm talking of the situation where they came to your place to attack you. These peasants who came were ordinary peasants. There was nobody important among them. I know they were members of political parties. They came to our place, they destroyed our house. Which political party, asked the judge? If you know the name of the political party, you say it. If you don't know, you say you don't know. I do not quite know. Well, I cannot specify the political party to which they belonged. I saw them go to meetings. I know there was the MDR party and the PSD party, which had many members in our region. Thank you, madam. I will move on to another question. The woman who was wounded and later on killed, you saw her, but you said you saw her wounded, but she was still living. Just a moment. I haven't asked my question. You wait for the question and you will try to answer. I take the question over again. How was she wounded? In what manner? And where on her body did she receive a wound? She was seriously wounded on the head. Her head was almost crushed. With what instrument was her head almost crushed? She received, a blow on the side just above the head, and then she received two other cuts from machetes. She was a young girl, and the persons who did that, were they old persons? Two persons? You talked about an axe and a machete. Does it mean that she was wounded by two persons or more persons? It was a whole attack. A group of assailants who attacked her, she became unconscious, and at the end of the afternoon, she came back to consciousness. Therefore, there were many, several assailants. Yes, several assailants. Men, maybe young people, maybe. Several of them were young people. Young people, in other words, you mean there were no women, no girls who were among the assailants?
You told us that when you left the area of your home, you went to a place called Murambi. Where is Murambi?
It is a small hill bordering our hill, and there is a forest on that hill.
Yes, it's in Taba Commune.
What happened, if anything, while you were there at Murambi?
Since the killings had taken on another dimension, we left the Murambi hill.
What do you mean by the killings took on another dimension?
People started chasing us wherever we went.
Do you know who was chasing you?
It was a group of people who used to meet together, who constituted the attacks and who chased us everywhere. there was a lot of sorghum at that moment, and they were looking for us everywhere. They even checked among the corpses, the dead bodies, and when they didn't find you, they continued chasing you everywhere.
Did you see this happening?
I saw it with my own eyes, because I was also being chased. Sometimes they found me, sometimes they didn't find me. They were about catching up with me, but evaded them. Sometimes they passed very close to me.
How many people were you with at this time?
I was with my younger sister. I was with my younger sister, who was seriously wounded. Later on, they found her and killed her.
Did you have a baby at this time?
Yes, I had a baby on my back.
Murambi, where did you go?
From Murambi, I went to a place called Remera.
Were you actually able to make it to Remera?
I did not reach Remera on the same day. Arrived at the house of a small farmer, a peasant. I wanted him to give me accommodation, but he said that he was afraid and that I could not stay in his house.
So what did you do at this time?
The peasant hid me in a coffee farm, in his coffee farm, and I spread out my loincloth in order to be able to rest a little.
At this time, what were you doing for food?
When night fell, I usually tried to go to a peasant. I think he is not so bad. He was not so bad because not everyone was so bad. I went to the peasant's house. He gave me food. I ate, and I also gave some of the food to my baby.
So that we know, was this peasant a Hutu or a Tutsi, if you know?
He was a Hutu, but I think he was not that bad. I thought he could not do me harm. Not everyone killed.
How long did you stay in the coffee field?
I spent a day in the coffee farm. But around 11 a.m., the owner of the coffee farm came and brought me food. He advised me to go to the commune because he had heard that there were other refugees at the commune.
What did you do at this time?
I left the coffee farm. I knew very well that I was taking risks, but I went to the commune.
When you say you went to the commune, is that an office?
It was a communal office of Taba, our commune.
Whose office was it, if you know?
It was the office of a burgmaster called Akaesu Jean-Paul.
How long did it take you to reach the Bureau Communal?
I didn't take a lot of time reaching the communal office. I was weak, but it took only 20 minutes.
Do you recall what time of day this was?
I reached the commune towards 12:30 noon.
Do you recall what the weather was like at this time?
I don't remember whether it was good weather or not.
Can you please tell us what you saw when you first arrived at the Bureau Communal?
I arrived at the commune. I found the refugees whom had been mentioned to me down the road and on the field before the commune.
These refugees, do you recall if they were men, women, or children?
Most of them were women and children. There were very few men.
Do you know if any of these people were soldiers, for example?
There were no soldiers there.
Were these people, these refugees, were they carrying any weapons? Were they armed?
They had no weapons. But the Interahamwe would have, actually the Interahamwe had beaten them very badly. In fact, they were lying on the ground.
You use the word Interahamwe. What is Interahamwe?
The Interahamwe were people who are members of the MRND party.
Did you see Interahamwe there at that time?
I found them there.
How many Interahamwe would you say you saw, if you recall?
I found 4 young people there.
Were any of these Interahamwe carrying any weapons, if you know?
Some of them had knives in their belts. Others had clubs. And still others had small axes. And also some had small hoes.
How many refugees would you say were there, if you know or remember?
There are a large number of them. There are more than 60. Except that some of them would leave from time to time to return to their homes to try to find something to eat. Even if this was at their risk of being killed there.
Excuse me, Mr. President. I believe the accused is raising his hand.
I give you the floor. Your microphone is not on. Try to talk. Is it not on? Microphone is not on. The interpreter cannot hear.
Excuse me, Your Honor. The interpreter cannot hear the accused.
Yes, that's why I was asking whether it was on. Thank you, Mr. President. I have some difficulties with the answer from the witness. All I can hear at the moment is the interpretation. I cannot hear the original answer given in Kinyarwanda by the witness. With regards to the last question, with regards to how many Interahamwe there were, that question put to the witness by the prosecutor, I heard that they were not more than 60. But in translation, I heard, I'm sorry, are you saying there are 4 Interahamwe and 60 witnesses? 60 victims, rather? Yes. Well, I'm sorry, well, I'm referring to the refugees. It says that refugees were in the number of not more than 60, but... And then what the answer was given by the interpreter was not the same. It was the opposite. Thank you very much. On that second point, that is true. Indeed, it was said that there were more than 60. On the first point, I mentioned that in the beginning, that we should be able to hear the witness. Unfortunately, I myself cannot hear the original. All I can hear is the interpretation. It is indeed your right to be able to hear the witness and to verify that the interpreter is being faithful to what is being stated by the witness. It is your right. So I ask that the prosecutor make some arrangement to enable for the court to be able to hear the witness in a very clear manner. Please ask the witness to speak stronger. The accused must also be able to hear. Perhaps push the microphone closer to her.
Okay, speak loudly.
Could we ask that we go back to this clarification? The number of Interahamwe that the witness saw, was there indeed 4?
Witness JJ, how many Interahamwe were there at that time?
Can you hear? The Interahamwe that I found there were 4 in number. There was also a young, including a young man, rather, who had left the army. We asked this question again because when the weapons were being described, it says these people had these weapons and other people had those weapons. So we wanted to make sure we were talking about the 4 persons in particular.
And again, approximately how many refugees?
I'm sorry, what did she answer? Interpreter, listen to the questions and the answers, and please relate the answers to us. We had the impression there were more than 4, because she said some had this, some had that, in the way of weapons, but I did not hear what answer was given by the witness. Well, in principle, the Interahamwe would get together in the afternoon. Yes, but were there 4 or more of them? That's all I'm asking you. When I arrived there, I found 4, but in the afternoon, there were more. They were very numerous, and they began to beat us. All right, says the president. Mr. Prosecutor, you have the floor.
How many more, if you know, arrived in the afternoon? Interhamwe, that is.
I saw approximately 40 young people.
Okay, we will talk about these events in one moment. But, Your Honors, at this time, I would like to introduce an exhibit. It will be marked as exhibit number 127, with your permission. I have courtesy copies for you here. A copy for the defense, and the original, which is a transparent sheet, and I intend on using the overhead projector. I have served this to defense counsel. He has seen it. With your permission, I would like to approach the overhead projector and ask the technicians to raise the screen for us. Is the microphone working?
Yes.
Your Honor, with the chamber's permission, I would like to be seated in order not to block anyone's view. Witness JJ, I am showing you what has been marked as exhibit number 127. Do you recognize this?
It's in the layout of the Bureau of the Commune of Taba.
Using the pointer, the laser pointer that I showed you yesterday, could you please show us where you and your group of refugees were on this first day at the Bureau Communal? Do you need some assistance? One moment, please, Your Honor.
Microphone to the president, please. Is the witness able to use this machine after your training of yesterday?
Well, it worked yesterday.
Maybe even the day before yesterday.
More try. It appears that she may be getting it. Okay. Now, can you show us where you were, your group of refugees? Well, we'll change plans, Your Honor.
Okay, stop.
What I'll do is I'll point out various areas.
Microphone. Have us describe what she sees, and then perhaps we might interpret what she's seeing. Since she can't use the pointer, she can look at what's being projected and tell us what she sees.
Okay, witness JJ. Actually, you can put the pointer down. Actually, you just fixed the light in an area. Okay, witness JJ, here's what we'll do. I will go over the plan, and you can show me and tell me when I get to the area where you and your refugees were at that time. Were you in this area here, which is by building number one?
It's below the road.
How about here? Yes, sir.
Go further. Yes, it's there.
Your Honor, what I will do right now, at this time, while you were at the Bureau Communal, did you see the accused Jean-Paul Akayesu?
Yes, I saw him.
Where was he when you first saw him?
I saw him when he was standing in the courtyard of the communal office.
Okay, we'll do the same thing again. I'll move my pen, and you can tell me if I come close to the area where you saw Jean-Paul Akayesu. Tell me when to stop.
It's there.
Your Honor, again, I will put this time an A for Akayesu in the area where the witness just indicated.
I give the floor to the accused. Thank you, Mr. President. As for the question asked by the prosecutor, the witness did indeed say that the accused was standing in front of the communal office in the courtyard. And I think there's a nuance between saying he was in the courtroom and saying he was in front. The translation was not authentic. All right, the question will be asked again, says the president. Where was Akayesu located when you saw him at the communal office? Where exactly?
When I arrived at the communal office, he was standing in the courtyard. He was standing in the courtyard along with two communal police officers. Okay, I think that's precise enough. Thank you, Mr. President. I simply wish to give the impression that I have at this moment Although I'm making an observation about the translation, this also has given an opportunity for the witness to rectify or to clarify. I think perhaps I might even drop this, because this is only giving her a means of correcting and adding. Because at first she said, in front of the Bureau Communal, or in front of the communal office, in the courtyard. Now, but then she gave another answer. You heard it yourself. Yes, but Jean-Paul Akeizu, says the president, I think we have to get used to everyone's habits. From the beginning of this trial, we have heard different people say different things. We have heard what she said in the beginning of her testimony, so let's not go back on this again. The prosecutor, counsel, you have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honor. You said that Akeizu was there with two police officers. Do you know who these people were?
Yes, I saw them, but the only one that I recognized was the one named Mushumba.
Okay, thank you. And just to finish with this diagram, this area right above where JJ is, what is this? Is this a path or a road?
It's a road.
Okay, now this area beneath the JJ, what are these here? They appear to be square objects.
The witness asks whether it is underneath these squares here, under these rectangles?
No, these particular rectangles right here. Hadish. Or squares.
On that house there or below?
That's my question. Are those houses there? Were there houses near the area where you were here?
Yes, there were houses.
Thank you. Mr. President, I've finished with this exhibit for the moment.
Please have the accused return to his place. Prosecutor counsel, I think we're going to take a brief adjournment to allow the witness to go and feed her child, and we will resume in about 15 minutes. This court sounds adjourned.
The session is called to order. The witness should be brought in. Good morning, madam. Is she feeling better? Is the witness feeling better? Yes, she is feeling better. We'll then give the floor immediately to the prosecutor.
Thank you, Your Honors. Witness JJ, when we left off, we were talking about your first day at the Bureau Communal, and you mentioned that you saw Akeizu in a courtyard with two police officers. My first question is, as to the police, do you know whether or not they were armed or carrying any weapons?
Yes, they had guns.
It was armed.
I did not see him with a weapon on that day.
Okay. At that particular time when you saw Akeizu with the policemen, what were they doing, if anything?
They were standing, they were talking, they were not doing any other thing.
Were they, at any point in time, did you ever see him walking around the Bureau Communal?
I only saw him coming out. They went out to check how security was doing, whether they were there in the commune.
Okay, we'll speak on that in a moment. Now, you mentioned earlier that in the afternoon of that first day, the Interahamwe came and began beating you. Can you describe that for us, please? What happened?
We suddenly saw a group of people who were armed with clubs and axes, and they attacked us. They started beating us up.
Was your group in the same location that you showed us before on the diagram we were looking at, Exhibit 127?
We were spread out in the commune, still below the road, and several of us, were wounded. And we were below the road, as I've shown.
What about you personally? Were you beaten?
Yes, I was beaten. Because, when I was beaten up, I became like a disabled person. In fact, I can't do much because of this disability.
Beaten.
I was beaten on the head, on the ribs, and they beat my left, my right leg.
Who did these beatings? Who it was?
It is the Interahamwes who met us at the commune.
At that time in the afternoon while these beatings were occurring, do you know where Akayesu was?
He was at the Bureau Communal.
Well, when you say at the Bureau Communal, at that time was he inside of a building? Was he outside in the courtyard, if you know?
He was in the compound in front of the Bureau Communal, because at the time of the war, he didn't go far away. He made rounds just in front of the Bureau Communal.
Do you know whether or not from where he was at that time, if he was in a position to see what was happening?
Yes, he would see him.
Excuse me. Let's move to the evening of that first day. Did anything happen that night?
In the evening of that day, the Interahamwes beat us up and drove us from there, and we scattered away from there, here and there.
I saw him get into a vehicle when I saw him with these communal police.
How many police officers was he with?
He was with two policemen.
At that time, can you tell us which direction he drove off to?
They went towards the hospital of Mirmirar Kome. That is the road that the vehicle took.
After Rakayesu left your area, what did you do?
When the Interahamwes beat us up, we sought refuge in various places in the bush. But at dusk, we came back to the commune. It had rained. It was still raining. We sought shelter in front of the houses which you saw below the road.
While you were there seeking shelter, at any time did you see Akayesu return to the Bureau Communal?
He came back to the commune around midnight because we heard the noise from his vehicle. He came down from the vehicle with a policeman. He asked the policeman to look for the refugees. He said that he didn't want the refugees there any longer.
Did he use that actual word, the refugees?
He said that he did not want the refugees there any longer, and he ordered them to beat us up because he said wicked people, he said, no longer had a right to shelter.
What happened at this time?
They fell on us and started beating us. Even those who had put their babies on the ground, where they started beating us, we scampered away and we sought refuge, or we spent the night in the banana plantation thereby.
Were you personally beaten at that time?
I was also beaten up. A policeman called Mushumba found me where I was resting on the ground, and he beat me with the butt of his gun.
And what part of your body was hit at that time?
He beat me just behind my ear. I was wounded at the same spot. The others had escaped. But I spent time picking up my baby, and that is why he was able to catch up with me.
The accused is raising his hand.
Your Honor, the accused is raising his hand.
I don't know if I understood correctly, Mr. President. Mr. President, it's very difficult for me to talk about the interpretation because just a moment ago, I heard the witness say that the Burmester at that time period did not enter into the Bureau Communal. But in the translation, I never heard that detail mentioned. I think that's also quite bothersome to have to come and interrupt the proceedings each time. But the witness then said she was hit in near the ear. and that the wound healed. That she was treated, that she was healed, perhaps even that same day. That's the idea that I heard. I did not hear this said in the French translation, however. Would you like for the question to be repeated, or? Mr. President, would you like the question to be repeated for some clarification on that issue? Yes, of course, Mr. President, for more clarification and more details, but I must also raise the concern that I raised a moment ago. Yes, I understand that we must simply state if you want more clarification. If you ask for clarification, we'll do what we can to make sure that is done. Thank you, Mr. President, except I find that at one point in time we will be required to go back to the actually testimony given in Kinyarwanda, because I find there are problems with the French. Yes, I'm telling you that you have that right, that each time you see discrepancies between the French and the Kinyarwanda, you have the right to raise it.
Witness JJ, just for a point of clarification, can you tell us about your injuries again that you received after the Akayesu's police officers beat you?
He beat me behind the ear, and there was a wound there at that same location, but later on, thanks to God, this wound was healed.
At the time that these beatings were occurring, where was Akayesu?
Apart from staying in return, I did not follow his movements because it was raining and it was dark.
Okay, then let's back up for a second. When he first arrived and stepped out of the vehicle, where was he at that time? Was he inside the compound of the Bureau Communal, or was he in your area across the street?
He got out of the vehicle with two police officers. I saw him get out by the road, and then the police officers began to beat us. The others fled, and I was still holding the baby.
Your group there, I'm not sure if I asked you this before, but the group of refugees, was that primarily Hutu or Tutsis, if you know?
They were Tutsis.
You mentioned that after the beatings, you went and spent the night, I believe you said, in the banana field. What happened the next day?
We spent that night under the rain. But the following day, we returned to the communal office.
When you returned to the communal office, did you see Akayesu?
We saw him there.
At any point in time, did you speak with him?
We told him because we were quite tired of it all. We said, kill us like you did for the others. Shoot us, if you will.
Okay, let's stop here for a second. How many of you spoke to Akayesu at that time?
There were about 10 of us. But if you will, we went to represent the others.
You say you went to represent the others. Did you speak to Akayesu from your position across the street, or did you go into the compound of the Bureau Communal?
We found him in the compound of the Bureau Communal because he was no longer going inside of the communal office itself. He would no longer go there often, is what the interpreter is saying. In the office, the communal office itself.
After you asked Akayesu to kill you, what did he say, if anything?
He told us that there were no more bullets, and that he had gone to look for more bullets in Gitarama, and that the bullets had not yet been made available.
What happened next?
I asked these police officers to chase us and said that even if there were bullets, they would not waste them on us.
Did the police, in fact, chase you away?
They sent us away. They said that we had to leave and that no one should ever find us there again.
What did you do at this time?
We returned to the same location because we saw that going anywhere else would have been the same situation. It would be death that would be waiting for us.
Did you stay in that location that day?
We stayed there the whole day, but around dusk, the Inter-Armée would come to check on us from time to time.
What would they do when they would come to check on you?
They would take young girls and women into a forest which was in the area. They began to rape them.
Did you see this happening?
I would see it, yes.
Your Honor, again, the accused has his hand raised.
I give her the floor. Thank you, Mr. President. The witness was asked who was taking the young girls in the forest, and the witness said that the young girls were taken into the forest and that they were doing what they would with them. But later on, the word rape was used. I think to talk about the word rape, who introduced the word rape, asked the president. Is it the interpreter you're saying? Yes, says the accused, yes. Well, the witness has said they had their way with them. I think there's a nuance between the two, says the accused. We've taken note of your observation. Mr. Prosecutor, there's been some comment made about this issue, that what was stated was that they did what they would with them, and that the interpreter used the word rape.
Witness JJ, in this area, about the Interahamwe taking these women away, my first question is, what did you actually see? The Interahamwe taking the women away, or what they did with them in the forest?
They would come, and they would take girls and women, and would bring them into the forest. And they would take them there to rape them on the hill.
Okay, my question is did you see what was happening in the forest?
What occurred in the forest also happened to me.
Okay.
It also happened to me. We were there, and we saw young men, a group of young men, become like they were crazy. And they came towards us. And they were carrying the weapons that I mentioned to you a while ago. And one young man did not have the same age as myself. He brought me along with young girls who were very young at that time. He brought us into a forest near the primary school. He began to rape us in front of everyone. And he took our clothes off.
What happened next?
They raped us, but these rapes really designed to humiliate us.
Witness JJ, I apologize in advance for some of these questions I will ask you. But I will have to ask you some detail as to what happened to you at this time. First of all, can you tell us exactly what happened to you personally at this time?
A young man came to get me. Before taking me, I asked him this question. Where are you taking me? I'm not the same age as you are.
What did he say?
He answered, you're an adult. Did you bring me into this world?
What happened next?
He took me, and he had a very long knife that he was wearing in his belt, and also a small axe in his hand. We arrived near the primary school. The classrooms are very close to the Bureau Communal, very close to the place where we were before. And it's very close to the road as well. And when we arrived at that location, this child put down this axe. He also put down the long knife near me. And you see, these things are not very easy to see. A young child like that raped me. I hope you understand that this is something that is very, very painful.
Witness JJ, we do understand. Now, I must ask you a precise question. At that time, did this person penetrate your vagina with his penis or any other object?
Yes, he used his penis.
What happened next?
Well, he finished the first time, and then a second time. And he had taken away the baby that I had on my back, and had put the baby by my side. After he finished, he told me to take my child and to leave. And that whenever he wanted to, he would come back and kill us.
Witness JJ was... Strike that. After this occasion, this event, where did you go?
After that time, we stayed there. We did not want to return to where we had our homes because we feared that they would kill us.
Was this the only time that this happened to you in this period?
We stayed there near the communal office, and the Inter-Army would always come back and visit us. On that day, they came, and the following day, they brought us in the forest, and they came back again. The following day, they came in large numbers. They arrived, and when they arrived on that day, it was raining quite hard. They selected the people they wanted to take away. They selected us, and they brought us in the cultural house, into the cultural room.
Let's stop here for one moment, please. How many of you were selected at that time, if you know?
If I were to give you an estimate, I would say that they took about 15 or more of us.
And how many people took you? How many of these men took you?
I could not count the number, but I could note that there were many of them, and that at that time it was very difficult to count them.
You mentioned they took you into a house which was a cultural center, is that correct?
Yes, it was in this cultural center.
This cultural center, where is it exactly? Is it within the compound of the Bureau Communal, or is it off the property somewhere else?
Yes, it's within the same compound as the communal office.
Thank you, Your Honors. At this time, with the Chamber's permission, I would like to quickly reshow Exhibit 127 so that the witness can identify which building is the cultural center, or was the cultural center.
Please proceed, and then we're going to adjourn.
Witness JJ, we're showing you exhibit number 127. On this exhibit, do you see the building that you identified as the cultural center?
Yes, I see it.
Okay, this time we'll do as we did last time. I'll go through each building and you can tell me which one it is. I'll start over here. Was this the cultural center?
It's not that one, no.
This one?
Please continue towards the left. It's to the left.
This one?
Yes, that's the one. Yes, it's that building there.
Your Honor, please let the record reflect that the witness has identified the building, which is marked number 5 on our exhibit, number 127. And again, with the Chamber's permission, if I can just ask a follow-up question on this exhibit, and then we'll recess as the Chamber desires. Now, in order to go to the building, which was the cultural center, building number 5, did you have to enter into the compound of the Bureau Communal?
Yes, one had to enter into the compound of the Bureau Communal.
Did you walk through the courtyard to get there, to building number 5?
Yes. From that road there, one would enter right there in that main entrance.
Is this what you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I mean.
And I'll put an X at the location I pointed. Now, in passing through the courtyard at that time, did you see the accused Jean-Paul Akayesu as you were walking to the building number 5, the cultural center?
Yes, we went by Mr. Akayesu.
Where was he at that time? Was he in a building or in the courtyard?
He was in the compound in front of the office.
Do you know whether or not he saw you as you were being escorted by these men to building number 5, the cultural center?
Yes, he was looking at us, because there are many of us. But he did not ask where we were going. But he could see that it was the Inter-Amway that were bringing us there.
Thank you, Your Honors. At this time, I am finished for the moment with Exhibit 127.
I'll ask for the accused then to return to his seat. We'll take a recess now. We shall resume at 3 p.m. for the continuation of the examination in chief of Witness JJ. Witness now stands adjourned.